Yale Podcast Network.
Welcome to ISM Fellows in Conversation, a podcast from the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. The episodes in this series present a discussion between a current ISM student and a visiting researcher in the ISM Fellows program. Each year, the Institute hosts a cohort of fellows who are in residence for 1 year to pursue interdisciplinary projects and teach at Yale. The following conversation focuses on the diverse research, teaching, and creative work of a current ISM fellow.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. My name is Jake Cunliffe, and I'm a second-year divinity student preparing for Christian ministry. I'm currently interested in how liturgy and the arts assist the work of pastoral care and inspire social justice in communities and congregations. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Marie-Ange Rakoutanien, a fellow and lecturer at the Institute of Sacred Music. Dr. Rakoutanien is a liturgical scholar whose work focuses on early Christianity. Her fellowship project explores how Augustine's preaching on the subject of the Sabbath opens new possibilities of religious devotion. Dr. Rakoutanien received her PhD in religion from Emory University in 2020. Dr. Rakoutanien, thank you for joining us. I'm excited to be speaking with you.
Thank you, and thank you very much for your invitation.
Why did you decide to come to the Institute of Sacred Music?
Well, really, the possibility of working in an excellent and premier interdisciplinary center on worship, theology, and the arts, this is just enchanting. And I find both, you know, the connection with the School of Music and the School of Divinity, and of course the marvelous resources at Yale, I found this a rich and stimulating blessing, especially since I've always considered my intellectual quest as bridging disciplinary boundaries, from liturgical studies to ancient history, early Christian studies, and practical theology. And I also envisioned the writing of history as a work of art and an expression of worship, and being at the ISM really has been a blessing to experience this.
As you reflect, the Institute of Sacred Music is such an interdisciplinary space, and your research interests and those of the other fellows reflects that. In what ways have interactions with your colleagues been productive for your research?
I really benefited from their wisdom. Well, my colleagues, fellows, are so generous, and they are much more experienced also than I am in the terms of their development of their careers and how to write and how to teach. I have especially enjoyed the fellows' lunches. It has been such an inviting and an open space, not only to share works in progress, and I have been inspired by my colleagues' works on music and visual arts and dancing, but also receiving their advice on how to live a healthy intellectual life and how to pursue this, and also how to pursue teaching. I especially remember this advice, teaching as collaborating with students and also listening to their silences. So they have really been a blessing to me.
Your current research project explores how Augustine's preaching about the Sabbath brings possibilities for religious devotion. What led you to this topic?
So the idea of writing on Augustine and the Sabbath was born years ago. And I still remember today vividly the moment I was riding a train to Paris. And I was reading Jean Danielou. He's a brilliant historian and liturgical scholar. And I was an undergraduate student at that time. And right there, I suddenly realized that Christianity was born in Judea, in a Jewish milieu. I realized, as Augustine put it, that the church is the bride of Christ, but the synagogue is his mother. And so at the end of the semester, I decided to ask my professor at the time, Jean-Marie Salamito, if he would be so kind as to direct my master's thesis. And so the following year, there I was, a graduate student, wandering the streets in the Latin Quarter in Paris. I was in search of a sound thesis topic, among many other things, actually. I was also in search of the latest novels and my favorite pastries and my favorite cafes. But I remember stumbling upon Augustine's writings in the library at the Bibliothèque de la Maison de la Recherche. And as I was reading through the Bibliothèque Augustinienne, those little red and green volumes, a new world opened to me. And I don't want to sound too mystical, but the voice of this African bishop really resonated with me and resonated with the questions that fascinated me on Jewish-Christian relations in antiquity. So I will tell you what I actually replied to Judith Liu and Thomas Grammen at Cambridge, where they asked me, why Augustine? And my answer was, because he speaks to me. So back in Paris, I told my professor, Jean-Marie Salamito, that I was interested in Jewish-Christian relations in antiquity. And he asked me, well, which languages do you know? And I replied that I had learned Latin at school. And he said, well then, why not Augustine and Jewish rituals? And that was providential, I think, a moment of grace. As you can see, since then, I'm still not done with Augustine or this topic.
In your work on Augustine and the Sabbath, you explore two devotional aspects of Sabbath, one being the Sabbath of the heart and the other the Sabbath within time. Say more about these distinctions.
Yes, of course. I remember speaking about it actually during one of our fellows' lunches. Augustine has many conceptions of the Sabbath, and one of the most beautiful is the Sabbath of the heart. Because what matters here is not so much when the Sabbath may be kept every week on the seventh day, but also within the heart. So Augustine reads Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5 as a conviction that God commands the observance of the Sabbath, not only for Jews, but also for Christians. The centrality of the heart redefines the Augustinian Sabbath. But at the same time that we have the centrality of the heart, we have a process of internalization of Sabbath devotion and a process of specialization, because Augustine displaces the Sabbath observance from time to space. However, we also have the Sabbath within time, as you mentioned, which creates rich possibilities of dwelling in time. He turns the eyes of his audience toward different temporal horizons between past, present, and future. And I think this is fascinating because, for instance, Augustine reflects upon the Genesis creation account, and he says that the seventh day is the only day without an evening. And thus, it signifies its everlastingness. And we will be able to enjoy this everlastingness in the future rest, in the heavenly city of God. But, and here the Sabbath becomes a paradox in time, because what we will fully enjoy in the future, we may already sense and touch in the tranquility of one's conscience. And that's how the Sabbath of the heart meets the Sabbath within time.
For many Christians, this is the season of Lent. How might the Sabbath of the heart, as a theme of private devotion, speak to them, and perhaps also for non-Christians too, during a pandemic when some of us have more time by ourselves?
It's funny. It's a beautiful question. It's funny because my dissertation supervisor, Edward Phillips, at Emory University, asked me a similar question to open my dissertation defense. Unfortunately, I cannot exactly remember what I said back in August, but this is what comes to my mind. I do remember how the pandemic hit last year in March, during the season of Passover and Easter. And I've been trying, instead of seeing the pandemic only as a hindrance to proper observance of religious festivals, Zoom now being our new best friend in terms of liturgical logistics, it actually taught me to see it as a way to declare God's time. Yes, the world is falling apart, but still, tonight is different from all the other nights. Tonight is the night of deliverance. And yes, the earth is faltering, but still, Christ is risen. So dwelling in God's time has been liberating. And to hear this whispering of God, whispering to us the beauty of hope, of a future that is unmoved, in stubborn rejoicing right now, not only for what we remember, for the deliverance that occurred once in the past, but also for what we hope and what we believe can still happen in everyday life. I think this is liberating. And thank you for mentioning the Sabbath of the heart when many of us have more time alone. It actually reminds me of Pascal, who says that the misery of men comes from the fact that they don't know how to dwell in rest, how to stand alone and still in a chamber, in their bedroom. And I think when Augustine describes the Sabbath as the chamber of the heart, it is an invitation to find God within, to come back to one's heart and to unveil its landscape. And you see, for instance, I was afraid of spending the winter break on my own, but I have learned to transform the fear and the feeling of isolation into the beauty of solitude. And then you can feel always at home in your heart, alone with God, alone but never lonely. In fact, at home anywhere in the universe.
This term, you're teaching two classes at the Institute of Sacred Music. One is history of early Christian liturgy and the other time in early Christianity. Tell us a bit about these classes and what the goals of these classes are.
It's been really wonderful to teach at the Institute of Sacred Music and the School of Divinity. So in the history of early Christian liturgy, we investigate sources and methods from New Testament times up to the late patristic period in the 5th century. And I'm hoping that students will develop their own narratives on the history of liturgy. And we are also constantly bridging past and present. Actually, we read a text on Monday on the apostolic tradition, and a few students were agreeably surprised to see the very words of the Eucharistic prayer so familiar to them in this 4th century document. And I do cherish those magical moments of the first encounter with the text, the moment a text resonates with you. And this is the same for my second class, Time in Early Christianity. In this class, we investigate the relationship between time and the divine. Time as transcendent and also as the object of socio-cultural construction. And in both classes, I try to teach how to read ancient texts, ancient sources as an art. I did not tell them that, but I actually agree with the French historian Michel Singh, who recently wrote a book, Seuls les enfants savent lire, Only the Children Know How to Read. And he says that there are things you understand as a child better than when you understand them as a grown-up. And I think this is true when we come to those sources. And I hope they are inviting in their very uniqueness, in their very strangeness, in the very mystery. I hope they are. And I hope we can come to them with open vulnerability as well.
What advice and encouragement do you have for hopeful liturgical scholars?
As I like to remind myself of, research is always personal. And I think if I can encapsulate it in two words, I would say boldness and humility would be my advice. Boldness, because the writing of a dissertation, and if you're thinking about students who wish to do so, it does not start with entering a PhD program. I think it starts with looking at the world anew. And this, you do not learn that only from books. It reminds me of what the French historian Henri-Irénée Marot once said, you do not become a brilliant scholar by living in the library, but by just also being a human being, fully embracing the gift of life, the gift of being alive. And I'm really hoping that there may be such life in the scholarly work that we all write. And if you indulge me with this, I have a small anecdote. You know, it doesn't matter how many words or how many pages you write. What matters is the density. And I realized it further when I wrote a paper on the French Revolution back when I was a student in France. And my professor, Gilles Candard, told me, Marie-Ange, you are too soft and you are too careful. When you write about the French Revolution, I want to hear the cry of the people. I want your paper to bear the smell of blood and sweat. And actually, on another occasion, he told me personally how I needed to emulate what Danton said. De l'audace, encore de l'audace, toujours de l'audace. Boldness, boldness again, and boldness forever. And later, this made me realize that, you know, with the French Revolution, these were people who suffered and hoped, who loved and died. And they cannot be reduced to objects of historical inquiry or means of rhetorical embellishments. They deserve a way of writing that is worth their struggles and hopes, a way of writing that is worth telling their stories. And so it is with Augustine and the Sabbath. So it is with writing about time, or writing about any liturgical topic. I think writing must recognize the dignity of one's subject of inquiry and bow down to it. So I would say to anyone who is interested in liturgical studies that liturgy is mystery, and we are certainly not done with deciphering this mystery. And as Dostoevsky once said, beauty will save the world. So go for it. Go and be the bearers of God's beautiful presence, from the words you write to the prayers you utter.
You have created and organized a conference that, from this time of recording, is happening tomorrow. That's the Thursday, the 18th of March. The conference is called Keeping the Sabbath from Antiquity to Modernity, Interdisciplinary Perspectives on Time, Rest, and Cosmos. And that's hosted by the Institute of the Sacred Music. Tell me about this conference.
The theme of the conference is at the intersection of time, rest, and cosmos. And this intersection relates, of course, to the project I'm currently pursuing as a fellow at the Institute of Sacred Music. And I'm actually really grateful to the ISM for this wonderful opportunity. The motivation for this project also comes from conversations and papers I've had and I've given over the past 2 years, crossing disciplinary boundaries and crossing the Atlantic Ocean too, at Emory University, at Yale, at the University of Aarhus in Denmark, and Heinrich Heine University in Düsseldorf, Germany. I was investigating time in Paul's letters, and this has been generative for the theme of this conference too. And I believe that studying ancient texts may emerge from relating them to other disciplines in the humanities. And the current temporal turn in the humanities and the arts has actually inspired the present conference. By this, I mean a broad interdisciplinary engagement with time, timekeeping, and temporalities in the humanities and beyond. I recall Mark Bloch, who attempted already several experiments between history and physics, or Richard Surabji, who's been studying and writing on Augustine along new relativity theory. So I'm really hoping that this conference can create a new metaphysics of time, if I may put it this way. Hence, the major questions that drive the present conference, what brings us together is the representations and practices of the Sabbath. And how to discuss the practice and theology of the Sabbath in light of the mystery of time. How do the discourse surrounding Sabbath practice open new possibilities of living and thinking about time? And how does rest depend upon one's conceptions of time and one's place in the cosmos? And exploring these questions, we will advance answers from Greco-Roman culture and late antique Christianity, ancient cosmogonies, contemporary calendars, Jewish Shabbat rituals, and the Christian Sunday, Day of Rest. And we will see the perspective of historians, liturgical scholars, experts in religious studies, Jewish studies, and biblical scholars. And I hope all this will pave the way to reimagine a metaphysics of time.
Dr. Raghuta Nain, thank you for leading us on such a rich journey. And if I may quote your own words to you, thank you for this encouragement to see the world anew with boldness and humility. And also in this middle of a very busy spring term, the reminder that we do not become brilliant scholars by living in the library. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jake, for your invitation. It's been a pleasure to share, and it's been a blessing to be with you and to be with the ISEM community. Thank you.
I wish you all the best for the remainder of your fellowship and good luck for the conference tomorrow.
Thank you so much. I hope you can join us.
This has been a podcast from the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. Thanks for listening.
For more information on the ISM Fellows Program, please visit ism.yale.edu/fellowships. Please join us again for more episodes of ISM Fellows in Conversation.